Welcome to Making Waves, a show about sound art produced for WGXC Wavefarm by New Adventures in Sound Art. Today's show begins the new year with a special celebration called Art's Birthday. It's been happening every year now since the 1980s. On the 17th of January, art was born 1,061 years ago when somebody dropped a dry sponge into a bucket of water. That day, in fact, the 17th of January, happens to also be the birthday of artist Robert Filliu, who developed this idea in relation to his performance poem, A Whispered Art History. Celebrating the birthday of art might seem like a comical, absurd idea, but it is a tradition in the art world that has continued in various ways since its founding in 1963. And to provide some perspective on this holiday, we're going to listen to three individuals who can recount some of the history of celebrating art's birthday. We'll begin with the artist Hank Bull from Vancouver, and he can provide us with a very good overview of some of the earliest celebrations up to the present day. And then we'll listen to Elizabeth Zimmermann at the ORF radio in Austria and Vart Weiss, a former radio engineer in Flanders and who's now an independent radio artist. They'll tell us about the unique ways in which Art's Birthday has been celebrated on the radio in Europe since 1999. For the celebration this year in 2024, Vart Weiss has created a piece of sound art drawing reference to the 50th anniversary of John Cage's piano work Etude Astralis. And we'll hear different parts of this piece interspersed through the conversations with Hank Bull, Elizabeth Zimmermann, and Vart Weiss. But the piece that he made begins with an invitation by John Cage to be amazed with the vast potential for creation and life in the stars above.
Art's Birthday 2024. I would be amazed. By Planktone. From our studio in Antwerp. Celebrate John Cage's Etudes Australis 50th anniversary with us by gazing up at the stars tonight.
If I tell you, as I believe, and I don't believe it religiously, I believe it realistically, I believe that this planet is not the only one to be inhabited. Everything I see in nature suggests the richness of creation rather than the poverty of creation. If we had all those stars and planets and galaxies with only one Earth in the whole situation, I would be amazed.
My first encounter with Art's Birthday was January 17th, 1974, at the Decadance, the famous Decadance in Hollywood, California. The Decadance was a celebration of the Mail Art Network and brought together all these people, many of them with colorful names like Anna Banana, from all over the place, people who many of them had never met before, but they knew about each other because they were exchanging postcards and photocopies and collages and various kind of art things that could happen in the postal system. And the Mail Art Network was kind of at its peak at that point. So this was an exciting event, and it happened to coincide with this date, which was had already been established as Art's Birthday by Robert Filliu. So you got to rewind back 11 years before to 1963, Filliou was invited to do some sort of event or project for the city of Aachen in West Germany. And he said, well, he made this following proposition, and there's a poem all about it, that says basically, you know, a million years ago, there was no such thing as art. It was just life. But one day, somebody, we know not whom, threw a dry sponge into a bucket of water, and art was born in this gesture. Suddenly we had art. So why don't we celebrate art's birthday? And we'll do it by having a public holiday. We'll close the factories, we'll let the kids out of school, we'll have brass bands in the street and a picnic and celebration and a big cake. So the city of Aachen took them up on it, and they did that, and it was quite a successful event. Then 10 years later, in 1973, he did it again, another similar situation in a small town in the south of France. And by that time, you know, he was quite well known in the male art network. And in fact, his idea that he called the Eternal Network was a kind of an inspiring concept to male art. So he was already being celebrated himself. And so the Decadence marked the 1,011th birthday of art. And that's the way it was. And nothing else happened until the early 1980s when the Clive Robertson made the suggestion that the artist-run centers in Canada could take up this date and take up this event and celebrate art's birthday. And in his, you know, in his mind, it was to celebrate the importance of art and the role that the artist plays in society. At the time, we were facing grant cuts, and it wasn't such a great situation. So, you know, there was a need for a kind of activist intervention. So that became art's birthday. And at that time also, you know, male art had evolved to embrace radio art and eventually fax art, slow scan video, and various forms of telecommunication, sending pictures over the telephone line, which seemed entirely amazing at the time. And so these technologies were employed to animate the network, and people celebrated art's birthday with various kinds of performances and cakes and whatnot all over the place, and traded pictures back and forth, and it was a great success. And it started to happen every year after that. And it has happened every year since the early 1980s, pretty well consistently until today. And now Art's Birthday is a very robust network of people who are using the internet. And now it's a lot of it is sound oriented, noise oriented, radio art that is mixed and collaged and exchanged and streamed every year on the 17th of January. That's how we got to where we are now. But Filliou's original idea, just to follow through with his idea, was that, you know, we can do this for a few years on the 17th of January, have a holiday, and then after a few years, why don't we have 2 days of holiday, and then three, and then four, and so on, until perhaps a million years from now, we have 365 days of holiday, and we wouldn't need art anymore, and we can just go back to life. So that was his proposal. But as with the Eternal Network, the ideas of Robert Filliou were very open to, people using them for whatever they wanted to do with. He'd make his proposal like that, and then he'd say, okay, well, what do you think? What do you think? And he would invite the listeners, the audience, to come up and say, well, I think this, I think that. So, you know, his idea of the Eternal Network, which was basically that art and artists are on a network with housewives and plumbers and truck drivers, and that we're all on a creative network together. But then that got appropriated by the artist-run centers, who took the Eternal Network to mean the Mail Art Network, or the network of artist-run centers in Canada. And you could be picky and say, well, that's not exactly what he said. But actually, Filiou was very open. So if Clive Robertson and the Canadian artists wanted to be activists about Art's Birthday and use it as a way to try and lobby for more government funding, fine with him. Great. Wonderful. And he was actually quite inspired to see the way that artists in Canada were organizing in a grassroots way and building their own alternative systems of creation and distribution. So, you know, he was just thrilled. When he first came to Canada in 1973, he couldn't believe it. He said, look at these people here, the stuff I've been talking about, they're actually doing it over here. So he was very supportive.
You mentioned about the connection between artists and other walks of life, and that seemed to be a important part of the Whispered Art history, his poem and his piece. And maybe that's gotten lost a bit in the celebrations.
Yes, I think it has, but it's still there in this sense of having a birthday party and inviting people over for a cup of tea and a piece of cake. That, you know, that's where art meets life. And anybody can participate in Art's Birthday. It's not only for professional artists who are going to be paid a fee. Anybody can come, and anybody can make a collage, and anybody can participate in whatever, you know, it is that's being done. So it is something where people often do throw a party, and everybody comes and participates, and it's not, there's no production of an artwork with quotes on it or a frame around it. It's just people being together. So in that sense, that idea of the network is still very much alive. And, you know, to quote Filiou one more time, his most famous thing that he ever said, that art is what makes life more interesting than art. So Art's Birthday is sort of a place where art meets life.
It seemed to have moved from the visual arts to radio and to sound art, and what has changed in the spirit of the event with that change of participation?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing, isn't it? How did that happen? Art's Birthday got hijacked by a bunch of radio pirates, basically, and I don't know, what is it in the structure of the event that is conducive to that kind of, you know, web jam type thing. Filiou, he did some incredible radio interventions himself, but he wasn't really a radio artist, and he didn't talk a lot about radio as a medium or sound. Like, he wasn't discipline based in that way at all. You know, Fred knew Linda, and Linda knew Charlie, and they said, let's do something, and let's do it again, and it just went that way. And I don't think it's there's a reason for it, and it's fantastic that it has existed. I think, you know, when the internet came in, it really did make it a lot easier for people to do these network platform co-productions, because they don't cost much money, and it's very easy to keep a website up, and people can plug in if they want to, and you can bring on new people. Anyone can participate. There's no curatorial gatekeepers, which, again, you know, is very true to the original spirit of the thing, that everyone is an artist. And so, I just think that maybe there's a bit of technological determinism there, that the technology enables a certain kind of behavior. And I think that whatever democratic potential remains on the web is very well expressed in Art's Birthday. You know, all we hear about the web these days is the bad news, but there's still good news out there. I mean, look at us talking right now. Even in the early days, this is to digress a bit, when we first started doing telecommunications in the late 70s, and what loomed on the horizon at that point was 1984. And, you know, we were called utopians, but actually we weren't. We could see that there was a great threat from surveillance, and that there was the powers that be were going to use this to control our minds and control society, and that, you know, we had to get in there and use those tools to critique the system. And we'd been preceded by video artists who did the same thing, you know. Back in the day, everybody was reading Jerry Mander, Four Arguments Against Television. His idea was that we shouldn't have anything to do with television. Let's get rid of it. It's ruining society. Well, good luck with that. You know, we felt, no, you got to go in there and use those tools to build a critique and to provide an alternative, positive use of these technologies for, you know, creative and democratic ends. So, you know, it's the same thing with the internet.
I think Robert Adrian and Heidi Groneman's involvement might have been a point of transition towards the use of radio, and then also the ability to have audio over online, facilitating that eventually.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think it's crucial.
You worked with them. What was the spirit and mindset that they brought to the kind of evolution of Art's Birthday?
Well, their thing evolved in an interesting way, but you know, you bring up a really good point. So if we were to put a rubric over the whole thing, you could say that Art's Birthday started with mail art, and then it went through a phase of activism and artist-run centers, and then it went to the phase of radio and networked audio. So what about Heidi and Bob? So, you know, Heidi began as a radio broadcaster. She worked for the BBC German Language Service in London. And that's how she met Bob, who was a Canadian artist and part of a ragtaggle band of expats over there in the 60s. Can imagine what it was like. And they fell in love, and they moved to Vienna, where she's Austrian. And she got a radio show on the Österreichische Rundfunk, which is the ORF, the national radio. And it was an art program once a week. And she would interview painters and sculptors, and she would go to the biennales and report on the goings on in the art world as a radio program. And when we met in the late 70s, we met in San Francisco. I was down there with a bunch. We were doing a radio play at La Mamelle, which was an artist-run center, and she was visiting France and heard that there were these artists that were doing a radio play. She wanted to find out what that is. She came and she said, well, what are you guys doing? And we said, well, we're doing radio art. Radio art, she said. She hadn't heard that before. Radio art. Oh. So that got her going. And then she started to do a lot more of her shows about people who were using audio, like publishing cassettes and mailing them around, or doing sound installations and doing sound transmission projects and so on. She got really into it until eventually the program, which is still running today, changed its name to Kunstradio, Art Radio, and became a real anchor. And then when the telecom thing came in, and Bob was a real leader in that and a real pioneer in using, you know, what today we call email, and setting up a network of artists to explore this new medium, which wasn't easy to get going, but it had huge potential. So then they reported about that on the radio. And when the internet finally took hold in the 90s, Kunstradio was one of the first radio stations in the world to do live streaming. And they streamed audio radio art. And then they connected different cities around the world to do what we would call a web jam, where you have people all streaming at the same time, and then it would go into a kind of mixer robot and get mixed together, and another sound would come out, and this would be broadcast simultaneously on different radio stations around the world over analog radio and then also internet radio. So there was a very convenient a natural marriage of the radio art with the wider world of net art and streaming sound and that sort of thing. So they were definitely leaders, and they're still anchors to the whole thing. I mean, Kunstradio will definitely be on the set for January 17th, 2024, and as will many other radio stations. I mean, in Vancouver, where I am right now, and the university station CITR will do its annual event called 24 Hours of Radio Art. And all sorts of people will pitch in for that. And so that's happening many, many places. If you go to the Arts for Birthday website, you'll see people in Russia and Thailand, all over the world, that are doing radio art on and sound on the 17th of January. So a lot of them never heard of Philu, and I don't think it matters. It's fine. It's good. It's got a life of its own. It's exactly what it should be doing.
Well, my first real experience with Arts Birthday is like as Kunstradio started celebrating Arts Birthday, which was in 1999, and we celebrated it in the so-called Radio Café, which is a café based in the city center of Vienna, and was very close to the original radio house there. And the main idea also came because at the time Robert Adrian X, who is a Canadian artist who lived in Vienna since the early 70s, he was involved with Western Front and Hank Bull, in one of the first Arts Birthdays they were celebrating with an exchange, at the time one called it telecommunication art, in 1991. And so Bob has known for a long time about Arts Birthday. And so in 1999, the year before the year 2000, there was also an intense exchange going on between the Western Front Society, the Artist Run Center in Vancouver, which was founded by Hank Bull and others, also in the 70s, and Kunstradio in Vienna. And Kunstradio and Western Front, they started a project called Vancouver 2000, and there were lots of exchanges going on between Vienna and Vancouver, as Hank Bull called it since 1979, Vancouver. So the imaginary city of Vancouver unfolding between Vienna and Vancouver. And in the course of that series, we also started celebrating Arts Birthday in 1999. And we started, I think, with a huge program, I think going on for almost 24 hours in the original thinking of Arts Birthday. And the great thing for me always was and still is, after that many years of celebrating Arts Birthday, is that it is also very funny. It can be very funny, it can be very serious, but it's like, it makes it very easy to transmit to people who really do not know so much about art, experimental art, sound, radio art, what it can be. And also it doesn't matter, because you do not have to explain, because sometimes it's just funny and people are enjoying it. And that's what is so beautiful in it, I think.
So it kind of allows for things to happen that wouldn't happen otherwise.
Exactly. It's also like with Kunstradio, like during our Arts Birthday, everything can happen. It's also like we maybe sometimes invite young DJs or artists who are more into the, more electronic pop scene, in Vienna, which we maybe otherwise wouldn't ask for a Kunstradio show or program. And so it's always a good mixture. And we've celebrated Arts Birthday very often in the ORF Funkhaus in Vienna and the Radio Kulturhaus, as it is called now. And also we never asked entrance fee from the people because it's a party, a birthday party. And so bring your presence and be there. And so it's somehow, it's also more open from the way it's organized and also how the Radio Kulturhaus, where we celebrated Arts Birthday, is dealing with events.
But you do other public activities through the year. This isn't the only one then that happens in a public space.
Yes, we do. But then we just had one in October in it's called Ritz, Bar Modern. And it was the I think the 20th celebration of the Ritz. And with that bar and performance space, Kunstradio has a very long history. And there we curated one of the nights and also we're broadcasting from there. And it happens, but because of the COVID and Corona, of course, it became a little bit less. And also because of the conditions of the National Public Radio, where our budgets get smaller and smaller, and we also need the sound engineers and so on. We still do it, but it's maybe not on that regular base like we used to do it. But we always celebrate Arts Birthday, either alone or with a partner in town, or also we also celebrated Arts Birthday sometimes. We have already been in Graz or in Mistelbach or Hamburg, wherever it fits and takes us. And of course, in the international network, we always celebrate.
Yeah, I was wondering if you could describe that. It seems to be European state radio stations have a show or party for Arts Birthday, and these are brought together into one broadcast that people can even hear online from outside of Europe. Maybe you can talk about that and how different people approach celebrating Arts Birthday around Europe.
Yeah, it's like since there's a group existing inside the European Broadcasting Union called Ars Acoustica, which is a group of radio producers and radio journalists inside the European National Public Radios who are dedicating their programs to, as they call it, Ars Acoustica. Some of them call it radio art, like Kunstradio, and Kunstradio is also a founding member of that group. And then the group said, oh, can we also celebrate Arts Birthday? And I said, of course you can, because it's the birthday of art. Everybody can celebrate. And please consider always that there is a net already existing network and we are not alone. And so the next year, the group, Acoustica, started off celebrating Arts Birthday. And that was already in 2006. And the main idea, of course, is that we celebrate Arts Birthday live and exchange, and everything what is in the exchange also can become material. And so it's a quite, for the EBU, it's a very successful event, also because it's live, which is rather unusual that more radio stations, national public radio stations, celebrate like this. But this, of course, was transported out of the Arts Birthday network to the group. And so that idea, of course, was given to the group, and the group was happy to join the network.
And it's still going on today.
Yes, we are going to celebrate on the 17th of January because art was born on January 17th. And that's why we celebrate on January 17th, which is for organizing an event, not maybe the best date in the year, because there is, as we know, Christmas and New Year's and holidays before. But it's like Christmas, it comes every year, it's 17th of January, that's it. But I must confess, I thought of we can move it to the 17th of May, maybe. But
yeah, that would be easier, yeah.
But a birthday is a birthday and you cannot choose when somebody is born. So, and art will become 1,061 years old this year. So, but it's really a great celebration, I think, because it's so wonderful and has that twinkle in the eye. I say, yeah, art is already 1,061 years old.
Maybe tell me about creating a radio that's live and creating an event that's for live radio, and how is that different in your approach than say you know other programming that is created in a studio situation?
For me, live radio is the most exciting radio, because it's like radio should be. I think it's like there's no control of what's happening, and that also gives a certain tension. You also know that there can be a mistake maybe, or a technical failure, which still can happen, although you do it very often or whatever. But I also think that if you do live radio and you listen to live radio, you can feel that it is live, although sometimes it doesn't. Nothing happens in the sense of there's a mistake or a technical failure. And sometimes it's even almost too perfect that some people already ask, was it really live? But that doesn't happen very often, because I think you can feel it if it is live. Even if you're a listener at home or in the car or wherever you listen to your radio or to the app on your mobile phone listening to the radio, I still think you can feel it, because for everybody involved and also for the artist, I think it gives a different tension.
And has there been a lot of resistance from the state radio? Is that all of the people in the Ars Acoustica, have they had to do a lot of advocacy to keep Art's birthday alive or happening every year?
It's quite easy to persuade the heads of the cultural channels to celebrate Art's birthday, because it's obviously international, it can be very funny, there's audience on site, there's young people coming, which is a big topic in the national public radios, the next generation of listeners. And so I think, because of how the whole thing, also with the twinkle in the eye, that it has that fluxus element in it, gives it also the strength to get over that strict borders one has in the organizations. To a certain degree, that it helps to get over that borders, because you say, but you know, there were so many people last time and people enjoyed it, and also people have to laugh and say, what, art is over a million years old? What is that? And then you can also explain that it was invented by a very well-known French Fluxus artist. And, you know, it has all that sides to it. And also that it has gives art that moment where you can say, okay, whatever will happen, art will survive us all. And so it has that very serious and very funny element in it. And it somehow it makes it over each and every border. It's really interesting, I think.
Yeah, it's a recipe that you think wouldn't work, but it's actually that the experimental element, if you will, that that gives it the life and actually makes it really accessible for the general public.
Yeah,
which is kind of
exactly.
Unusual. You know, you never thought that would work, but it's and I guess really the fact that you and your colleagues in the European network have been able to sustain this since 2006. So it's like, you know, that record speaks for itself.
I think so too. And also like there's some colleagues, but there are like for a time, the Swedish radio was also celebrating Arts Birthday on big scale with one of the arts museums in Stockholm. And they had thousands of visitors, thousands. It was unbelievable because they were open to do whatever they wanted to do with the museum together, and in that flux society, many things can happen at the same time, and you do not have to follow a very strict rule.
It's a recipe for a carnival.
Yeah, that's true. But it's always also the nice idea that you say, okay, artists exchange presence, and that okay, they do it over a network, and they used to do it via mail art, and then they have sent faxes, and then there was that technology called slow scan television, and there's radio, and there's this and that, and sometimes you only bring your present to the party. We also had some arts birthdays in Vienna where we asked the audience to bring a present to art, and we even then presented it to the other audience, you know, so that it is a real exchange also in the sense of the original idea maybe. And also sometimes, like last year, although it was after the COVID restrictions, we said, nah, we only celebrate in the studio, we do live radio and for the stream, and then Alien Productions, they took part in a networked performance with Matthew Herbert, and they all cooked eggs, and then we were eating the eggs. So and it was really nice. And there was a cake afterwards, of course.
Professionally, I am a retired radio engineer. I worked for the National Broadcast in Flanders, in Belgium. And I was working there mostly for drama section. I did mostly features and drama, but also the regional transmissions, sports and this kind of stuff. So I'm now for 5 years retired. But I'm still active doing my stuff. I studied filmmaking, but was mostly interested in sound. So this one to another was working quite well, and I could work for radio. Actually, they gave me the opportunity to work for television, but they said, no image. I like only the sound. So I came involved with radio. And because I was working for radio, I came into connection with EBU. EBU is the European Broadcasting Union, and they are a group of professional broadcasters who join and do things together, and they also own some satellites for transmission of the Eurosong Festival, for the football, for the news and this kind of stuff. But also for, luckily, a little part of it is used for classical music. And in this classical music group, you find the Ars Acoustica group. And so I'm involved by this way into what is Art's birthday today.
Okay, and what was your first memories of Art's birthday?
Ooh, it was 2005. And actually, it was quite primitive. It means I getting connected with Elizabeth, and I could they ask for sounds and this kind of stuff. And after that, I get connected to Dmitry Nikolaev from Radio Moscow, and that was actually the first time I really had a party, a real Art's birthday party, and we were with three people. It's my wife, some friend, and I. And we are sitting in the living room on a small table. And I was sending sounds to Dmitry by some traditional classical telephone modem. And he sent it material to me by attachment, by mail attachments. And I was really bit editing and playing with it and returning to him. So, and he made a final mix by Radio Moscow and put it back on the satellite. So that was the first time I was really myself involved doing things for Art's birthday. It was 2006.
This notion of a party for Art's birthday and radio, what is that about, you think? What is a party, is it a party on radio, or is it to draw attention to experimental audio? How did the EBU and your colleagues make that connection?
I think there are two stories, the two parts of the story. The first story is, of course, EBU, and I'm very happy to do it, and they have this two channel on the satellite for 4 hours, and all different broadcasters and also independent artists as I am can put stuff on this channel, and it will be used or rebroadcasted or remixed, or it's available. So that's a really radio party going on, not in all countries, but the most countries use it their own way. It was my dream to have it, I always say, in the institute with the institute. It means in the institutes, I like to have it in some kind of official museum or something. And I get in contact with the Museum for Contemporary Art in Antwerp, and they were interested into it. Actually, they have a great collection of Robert Fayou art. They have a lot of them. And I was lucky some years ago, they had a real retrospective of Robert Fayou, and I could do my Art's birthday with Fayou, between Fayou. It was so great to do. So actually, I succeeded to have it in the institute, but not with the institute. It's going on satellite. They can use it. It's being broadcasted at the national broadcast as a kind of event, and they promote the event, but not themselves active in the event. But that's another story.
So, but right now on your website, you have an audio piece playing. Is that what will be heard on the Art's birthday broadcast?
Yes.
Okay. And maybe you can tell us a bit about that piece, because it's quite a special piece and has another anniversary related to John Cage.
Actually, it's each year I do something different. I have doing from real sound art to it was my dream to have a cooking program, so I made a cooking program myself too, but of course in a kind of artistic way. And this year, the occasion I do is I'm not only celebrating Art's birthday and Robert Fayou's birthday, but I'm also celebrating the fact that 50 years ago John Cage composed Etudes Australis. It's a piece about the stars above Australia. And actually I'm doing a little bit myself, so it means I made a sound map of the stars the 17th of January above Antwerp, and used this image to be processed by some computer stuff and make sounds and MIDI out of it. So it is played electronic composed sounds, and on top of those you have piano playing and doing not the same, because of course John Cage is more a composer as I am, but in a certain way have the same experience of a piano playing based on the stars you have on top of you.
Okay, so you were interpreting the graphic as a pianist. Pianist, I guess.
And the interview, because the a part of it is a little excerpt of an interview with John Cage, and that's also my advice for the people listening to this. Please take your time, go the 17th, look above you to the stars, if there are no clouds, of course, and be amazed that we are someone, something on this quite unique planet.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's interesting because I think the spirit of art's birthday was, or his ideas, I think, was that it was about considering the creative or that other dimension of experience that we often suppress and don't consider. So even us as artists, we have to look at things sometimes an alternative way, even for ourselves, you know. So it's looking to the stars as opposed to looking inwardly for direction. And how, what was the relationship at the radio studio when you were there to, you know, to doing things that were unconventional and creative? Was this something that was limited, you know, that you were focused on just recording radio dramas, or was that aspect encouraged and always a part of everything, and there was a fine line between work and play?
Yes, of course. That's right. I was honored and to be in this situation to be paid to play in a certain way. So I was very happy to be part of and of course all my skills, if I could give them, I did it. And when things became something different, and sometimes we had great success, sometimes we lost it a little bit. But because also from this I could make, because I did a lot of Beckett pieces too, and we got permission from the editors of Beckett to play with it, because it's very strict what you can do with Beckett, but we asked and we convinced them that we could do something that make it okay, but of course in our own way, so we could do that. And by this way I get in touch with theater, and one of the last pieces Beckett made was some dance performance, Quadrat, and I made I could perform this live as a part of a radio program. To bring dance, it's not really dance, to bring something happening on the scene onto radio. So those things could happen and happened. I was very lucky to do that.
And is that level of freedom still active today in the radio there?
No, that's very sadly, because radio is really, we are really... and actually there's no drama produced anymore, because it has too less listeners. It must be popular, it must be cheaply made, it's more cheap to phone someone to have an interview than to have an actor and a writer and a director and a sound guy, and you see. So radio is really getting quite streamlined in popular ways. News is very important, sport is very important, talking about something is very important, but not really. When I started at radio, we had our own symphonic orchestra, we had our own jazz orchestra, we had our own jazz combo, we had our own choir, we had our own actors in service for the radio. Today, all this is gone. There's no national, orchestras anymore from radio, because they were very important, because young composers had the opportunity to the pieces performed and recorded and be on the air. So that is lost a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a shame. Yeah, it's the same history here. Yeah.
Yeah, but luckily we have now today in the 90s I get involved into digital audio editing and recording. The laptop was coming. The laptop and computer became payable. Interface become microphones. You can buy very good microphones, not cheap, but payable microphones. You have software. You have software on a very good price, low price, professional software. And so you can do, and that's luckily like I'm at, because I have the equipment, I have some microphones, some computers, some knowledge about what to do. So yes, production is really getting into personal hands. Yeah, the podcast world is now became the radio world.
That's true. There is a lot of freedom there, that because it's still kind of in a state of exploration and self-invention. How do you think, one last thing is, I don't know if you ever knew Robert Filliou, but if you had known him and if he was still alive today, how would he feel about the celebrations that had been done in recent years for Art's birthday? Would he have a different approach, or do you think, or would he be into the kind of very radiophonic direction that
I think it would have been. I think it would have been, yes. The same way, I think if Beckett had known what is possible today, he will be very creative with that. So I think he will be very happy with people working with it, and in the spirit from Filliou, he would be very happy. He was very happy if he could see this, what's happening. Yes.
And do you think we missed something from what his original ideas are, or is there anything that hasn't been... in terms of the initial parties and celebrations that he organized, and the marching bands in Aachen and stuff, and that kind of thing, are we not doing enough of that, do you think? Or
For me, it can be, if it is more is better in this way. Normally, more is less is better in this way. The more it can happen, please do. Also, for that reason, I'm still folding hats. I have this little site about folding hats. So I'm really looking forward. People start folding hats from any kind. And for those who don't like to fold hats, please don't fold hats, but fold something different. Yes.
And do people do creative things with them? And
yes, they do. Yes.
What are some examples of what people have made?
Yes. Of course, they are online, but a few years ago, it was a bit 2015 or 16, we celebrated 10 years that I was doing it 10 years. So I had this competition, fold a hat for the golden hat. I have a friend who is a goldsmith. He made a really very nice golden hat in really gold, folded, but really folded. And we had about, actually it's a great story, because I had this idea, oh yes, I will do it. I will do a kind of competition and people can fold a hat, send it to me. And we have a jury and we will decide which one it will be. So I had about 75 people have sent something, a kind of folded hat from some way designed with painted or something different, or put it on the head of a dog. And finally we came with the jury, and we kept on the 75, we kept five out of them, what one of them would be. So finally we decided, okay, it will be this one. And that was the problem. Who is this guy? Because I had only a mail address. Where does he live? I knew also it was very difficult. You can't send gold to America by post, for instance. So part of the rules was they had to take care self about how it came to them. But strange enough, it was a guy from behind, some streets farther away. So crazy that it was really somewhere I could go his home and give this golden hat to him. So it was very funny. It can happen, yes. From 75, from all over the world, I get people from all over the world. Yeah.
Wow. Well, I mean, I guess that's the aspect of exchange that's part of art's birthday.
Yeah.
You've been listening to an episode of Making Waves. In this episode, we heard from Hank Bull, Elizabeth Zimmermann, and Vart Weiss about the history of celebrating art's birthday on the 17th of January. We ask you to circle that date on your calendar, and on that day, have some cake, gaze upon the stars to consider the abundance of creativity that is all around us. Thanks for listening, and join us on Making Waves 1 month from now. And to take us out, we'll listen to more of Vart Weiss's response to Etude Australis by John Cage.